Hi, I'm Josh Rushing in for Femi OK today, and you are in the stream. In 2019, the U.S. state of Illinois passed recreational marijuana legislation on the promise to make sure the industry would provide opportunities for black and brown communities that were once ravaged by the country's war on drugs. By some accounts, Illinois is failing to fully live up to its commitment. Now, those shortcomings are the subject of a new documentary by AJ Plus.
4,518 applications for what was originally going to be 75 licenses. 99% of people weren't going to get them.
Because of its federal illegality, they're not able to accept credit cards, and so most of it is cash specific.
The buzz about state licenses, lotteries, and legalization is at the core of Illinois' budding marijuana business. Another central issue is why it's so difficult for seed money to bloom into a flowering business.
Can it be equitable?
In the United States of America?
That's where we're doing this interview, so yes.
So how can the marijuana industry be more equitable? Joining us to discuss this, Imayan Ibanga. She is a presenter with AJ Plus and the correspondent in the documentary you just saw a clip of there. And joining us from Chicago is Danielle Perry. She is the Cannabis Regulation Oversight Officer for Illinois. And Belisha Royster, a cannabis lobbyist and the president of Social Equity Empowerment Network. Welcome, everyone. I should also mention that Belisha is in the documentary as well. Now, look, if you're joining us from YouTube, sound off. Leave a comment or a question. Get them to me. We actually have a live producer in there. See that box right there? There's a live stream producer waiting to get your questions to me so I can get them into the show. So be a part of this with me, right? All right, Imayan, I want to begin with you. First off, well done on this documentary. It's such a relevant topic. It's spot on. Please tell us about zip codes and where the audience can find zip codes.
Thank you, Josh, so much for having me today. Mm-hmm. Yes, Zip Codes is a new show by AJ Plus, the digital video arm of Al Jazeera. And it's really a show that showcases how where we live defines how we live. So we go into specific places and look at communities often marginalized and really dissect what's going on there and the impact of those people living there.
And why did you do this issue now?
I think this issue is really important now, especially as we look at people pushing towards federally legalizing cannabis. Illinois is a state. It's the first state to include things like social equity as part of the process. And I do think what happens in Illinois could showcase what this means for the rest of the nation.
Danielle, why was it important to include social equity in the process in regulating this industry?
I think it's something that should be included in every process. Mm-hmm. It's not a side thing, which some folks do. And I typically think, and I say this all the time, they legalized cannabis in a lot of states and equity wasn't a part of the conversation. I don't think we should be starting any industry in this country or anywhere without having some real conversations about equity in every decision that we make.
Is there another industry that's a precedent for this?
Not that I know of. It really does feel like, you know, I feel like in every meeting people say we're flying the plane, we're on the plane and building the plane at the same time. And The truth is, this is the first ever to happen. And we are a model, as you said a minute ago. And one of the things I love about that is we can push other states to do more than we've even done, which we see happening. There's no state that you've seen come after Illinois and not add equity. And that's because Illinois made a point. And we are teaching not just through the successes we've had, but even some of the things that didn't always align the way we wanted, teaching other states how to make this better, which is the goal.
And Danielle, you applied for a license for a dispensary, right? But you did not get it. What happened?
I didn't.
I'm sorry, Belisha. I'm looking at Belisha and I said Danielle. Belisha, you applied for a license for a dispensary, right?
I did. I did apply for a license.
And you did not get it?
No.
What happened?
I did not. Basically, I wasn't a veteran. I'm not a veteran, and I didn't score perfectly. So in this particular realm of things, they decided to add a veteran clause, which added 5 points. And ultimately, those 5 points superseded the 50 points of social equity, which ultimately eliminated me.
Danielle, can you respond to that?
Yeah, you know, I find it interesting whenever we're talking about the application, where people pinpoint the thing they didn't get the points for and usually say it's a preference. But the truth is, I think it's a larger issue at hand. And the issue is, we had an application process that was competitive. So you can pick whichever point you want. Was it the bonus points? Was it the veteran points? Was it the Illinois preference or the Illinois points? It doesn't matter which point you pick, because it's a competitive process and the goal was to get the people with the highest score. If you didn't have the highest score, you didn't get the licenses. And so I think the larger question is, is it important for us, and should we in the future do a competitive process with points, and should we have limited licensing? Because to me, when you have a small amount of licenses and you make it based on how well you got in the points, it usually ends up being how much money did you have to be resourced enough to get support. And yeah. Felicia and I talk about this all the time. We want to streamline the application and think about ways to do an application process that doesn't require people to have to think that they need consultants.
I think you make a really good point. Yeah, I think you really make a good point. I think that it's important that we recognize that it is a competitive process. The people that currently run the businesses right now that are medical, that have been there since 2013 when the medical marijuana law passed or the Compassionate Care Act passed, were not perfect. They just had the money and they had the will to go in and get those licenses, and they did. And I think that the problem is not necessarily perfection or not necessarily where the shortcomings were on the application. I think that the problem was is that it was designed for not only for it to be perfect, but it was designed for the people that could afford to put in several applications to flood out the people that really couldn't afford it. And of course, social equity, 9 times out of 10, an applicant can't afford it. You bring up a good point. It is a very competitive process. And I think that most of the people, which in my personal team, you know, as an individual, I did not earn one, but I also put in a family application with a veteran on it. And we had a third-party vendor to score our applications, and our scores were wrong. So there were so many different debacles with this third-party KPMG that actually scored the applications, that even though there was the room for a perfect score, they really missed a lot of points. They really missed a lot of the mark. And I think that ultimately, yes, it's perfect, but who knew that you had to be social equity and had to be a veteran in order, unless you were part of the program, to know that, okay, yes, we aiming for a perfect score. We're aiming for everything that's on the table. I ultimately think that it should be open license. It's open. If you qualify and if you can afford to apply, then you deserve a license. And I think that that'll be ultimately what would make this more equitable.
Well, in the documentary, we have Danielle's predecessor, Toy Hutchinson. Can we play this for a second?
It was the most comprehensive approach that anyone had ever taken, especially legislatively. It just had never been done before. I don't know how to solve for 90 years of criminal justice reform that needs to be undone and dismantled. And I definitely don't know how to do that all in one bill.
So, Belisha, how does that sound to you? It's like she says she doesn't know how to undo all the problems around this in one bill. Does that seem fair, or is that just not good enough?
You know what? I think it's both and. I think that she's right. Single-handedly, she can't, or her colleagues cannot cure racism or cure the system of white supremacy in one bill. However, as the people, we elect public officials, we elect people in government under the premise of hope and trust. And so we trusted that our elected officials and the politicians that we put in place to pass this bill actually read it and actually understood the ramifications of what would happen. And although we can't put race, and there's some federal ramifications against that, we can put some safeguards in place to make sure that the people that are intended to benefit from this do. And I don't think enough safeguards were in place to actually make sure that the people that should have been touched and awarded these licenses were actually awarded, as making sure.
I think you have to think about, though, what the goal was. If the goal was to, as defined in the statute, it was to make social equity someone who was formerly incarcerated or had a family member was or from a DIA. That's who won these licenses. On the agricultural side, we have given out 40 craft grow, 33 infuser, so far almost over 50 transporters, you are seeing that those people on the agricultural side were in fact 100% social equity. So what you'll see in the news is nobody got a license. Number one, that is not true. Agricultural folks have received their licenses. You'll also see that people will say nobody of color got a license. 67% of the people who receive the licenses on the agricultural side are people of color, and over 40% of them were Black. So to say that it didn't work, to say people didn't get licenses, is just untrue. Do I agree with Felicia, we can keep going further and keep pushing it, keep changing the legislation? Absolutely. And if you look at the dispensary numbers, which you just had up, they're even higher. So right now, the industry that was medical, that moved into the adult space, was 100% white and male. Now, with those licenses that we have given out to craft growers, infusers, and transporters, you have now seen the industry go from 100% white and male to 34% white, which means right now,
Danielle, I have a question. I'm sorry, Felicia. I hope you don't mind me jumping in. Because the numbers that you're saying, right, I believe are true. But I think what's really important to kind of put in context, right, is currently right now, today, there are no majority Black-owned dispensaries in the state of Illinois, period, right? And we have the numbers that bear that out. When we tried to do
a can I ask you a quick question? Why do you think that's more important? People often say that that's
I think it's important when we're talking about issues, right? Like, if one of the concerns, which I heard in doing this piece, is issue around race and equity, right? You're saying you want to target people who are disproportionately disenfranchised by the war on drugs. What we know for a fact is that is overwhelmingly Black and brown communities, but we are unwilling to use race in the legislation because then it might not hold up in the federal courts, is what I'm understanding. But now you're still not seeing those people own a majority share of the business.
That's what I'm saying, and that's enough. The question is,
Illinois considers this success?
I think it's about control.
So there were four licenses.
People are getting licenses, and they're straw men. There's no, once again, there's no safeguard in place to say that this person that actually's name is on the application is actually going to control it 3 years from now. So if we fight for social equity and we put this phenomenon out there about social equity without the actual safeguards to say you can't sell your license to anyone, or if you do sell, because that was brought up in our documentary as well, if you do sell, then there's parameters in place where any person that owns this social equity license must hire within the community, must make sure that they're doing business with Black business owners. They must make sure that, you know, these employees not only are employees, but they're managerial. Make sure that they're having shelf space for Black products. So these are parameters, and making sure that they're adhering to the community engagement plans in these communities. These parameters need to be in place to make sure that even if they're sold, that there's still social equity interests involved. And that, to me, is the safeguard.
You brought up a point that it is covered in the documentary, and I want to show a clip from that right now.
I think if a social equity applicant sells, I don't think anything's wrong with that, because the alternative is taking a very large financial risk. You have to then maneuver and navigate all the intricacies of owning a business that is not federally legal. There are only so many places that will allow you to sell. Whole communities don't want you there. Whole landlords don't want you there. If you've been struggling your whole life and somebody was willing to give you $3 million and you don't want to take the risk and you want to live comfortably, I understand.
So, Belisha, Brittany's saying, and she actually does have a license, that if she wants to sell it, she should be able to sell it. Why not?
And, it's her license, ultimately. The thought process behind this opportunity is creating generational wealth. And if the $3 million provides that for her and her family, and that's what she's aiming to do, that's her decision. My only hope is that the people that have the opportunity to have been granted with these licenses actually make sure that social equity is at the helm of their decision. And so I feel like those parameters need to be in place to make any owner of these licenses adhere to certain things to make sure that they're helping the communities that these licenses were meant to benefit.
So to be clear, Danielle, I just want to get this really clear. Is it a goal of the state of Illinois that there are Black-owned dispensaries?
we want there to be dispensaries owned by a diverse group of people. And absolutely, we want some of those to be Black. And the numbers you put up show that the lottery we just did produced over 41% of those lottery winners were indeed Black. And so these lawsuits that are holding up those people getting licenses, I have no control over. But the process that was put in place with the definition of equity as it is, it created and gave an opportunity for 40 craft growers, 33 infusers, 45 transporters, and a lottery full of dispensary winners who almost half are Black. So to say,
Do they own the majority of those businesses that you're talking about? Because I know that they're not currently in business, just for the audience.
No, so absolutely. I said they're stuck in litigation. And while they're stuck in litigation, I have absolutely no control. I do want to make a point that I brought up to Belisha a lot, and that's that what you see in this industry also, which is not common, is 100% Black-owned businesses. So on the agricultural side, we see 12 of the businesses being 100% Black-owned. And we all know there are not a lot of industries where you see that number of people who are 100% Black-owned. We heard, oh, they'll all be transporters. That's not true. The majority of the 100% Black-owned are actually on the craft grow side. And so I will say this. One of the things that bothers me, we have not seen anybody start creating craft grow. Obviously, it takes years to kind of get started, but we know that there are a number of craft growers who are actually finding locations, purchasing buildings, and moving forward.
Danielle, to your point, that it's like the plane's already taken off and now we're building it while it's in the air. We don't really even know on a broad basis who this industry is attracting to work in it. And that's being studied by a professor at the University of Illinois named Justin Levy. And he sent us this video comment.
To overcome inequity and inequality, what the cannabis industry needs first and foremost is better data. I and a few others in Illinois have been working with state regulators on a broad data-driven view of equity. On the downside, we know that employees in general and ownership in particular is less racially diverse than it should be. But we're seeing encouraging things too. 1 in 6 employees in the Illinois cannabis industry identifies as LGBTQ, which is several times the national average. And knowing the industry attracts people who are often marginalized in our society, and better understanding what improves their working conditions can help make this an industry that's truly for everyone.
Emmanuel, to his point, is this bigger than a race issue?
You're asking me, right, Josh?
I am asking you, yes.
Okay, I'm just making sure I heard correctly. I mean, I think we cannot talk about cannabis in the U.S. without talking about race, because I don't know that there are any stories that are based out of the U.S. that aren't also steeped in race, but that also means that they're also steeped in class. They're steeped in region, which all affect access. And I think he is correct when he says we would need the data behind this. And that's part of why this Illinois story is so important and the way they've decided to go about this. To be clear, their initial offering of licenses did not include social equity. There was blowback from that, which allowed a second set of licenses to be put up, which is how we get the social equity and getting those points, which I think is really important. But what happens if Illinois and Texas and New York and California and Nebraska all have these patchwork of laws is, you know, there's not going to be a federal standard for what we have in the nation. And so that could provide all kinds of issues in terms of who gets access and who gets licenses in terms of race and class, even looking at things like gender, which I think would be really important part of this issue. Mm-hmm. And so that's why this conversation around Illinois is so important, and also the conversation around the fact that it is still federally illegal to own, distribute, smoke cannabis. And so my question is always, you know, can something be legal on the state level if it's illegal federally?
Yeah, I'm glad you explained that, because much of our international audience is probably confused about this issue, that federally in the U.S. it is still illegal, but states have made it legal in kind of a patchwork of solutions that have come forward. Daniel, it seemed like you were disagreeing with something there. Can you jump in and explain the point you were going to make?
I just wanted some clarity around the idea that we put out licenses that weren't equity focused, and then the second time we did. But I think that you were referring to the medical space.
Okay.
I just wanted to confirm.
Hey, I want to bring also in some voices from our YouTube audience here. This is from Eris 106. Why do you even need a license? Can't they just make it legal to grow and sell for everyone? Indrani Payton says veterans do not necessarily mean social equity, though. And according to Illinois definition of social equity, veterans are not included in that definition. What? So, Imanya, can you touch on this? Because what does it mean? Is it actually legal?
Right. I mean, this is the question that I have, and it's part of the reason I wanted to do the documentary. You know, I think, of course, the federal government isn't criminalizing right now these operations that, like, the state of Illinois says is legal, but it could if it chose to. And I want to highlight that in its first year of legalized recreational marijuana in the state of Illinois, they arrested three times as many Black people for possession than any other race. So we're still seeing this level of inequity, of discrepancy that we were seeing even before this move to decriminalize and legalize, which are two separate things. That's not, they don't mean the same thing, which I think is really important.
For an international audience where it isn't familiar with the U.S. legal system, Danielle, why are they arresting so many Black people for something that seems to be legal there?
So there are still possession. If you read the statute, there were possession limits put in the statute. So people can still be arrested for a possession if they, you know, go beyond the legal amount. So things are legalized, but it's not legalized completely. And that's something that I think we should continue to talk about federally as federal legalization happens. I don't know that we need to continue to put limitations on possession as we move forward, especially as we move in the federal government considering to legalize. So it's just something to think about. But as of now, based on statute, that would be illegal to have a certain level or possession amount. And that's why you could be arrested.
Danielle, has Illinois done enough? Have they done enough to ensure social equity in this issue?
I think we have, like every state, we have further we can go. I do think people mischaracterize. I don't know why people are obsessed with the dispensary licenses and that's all they talk about. But I do think there are other parts that Illinois has done really well that people never discuss. We are the only state taking tax money and giving it to communities and investing in communities with the tax money. We put 45% of that tax fund towards R3, which is our grant fund to support violence prevention, reentry, and work in community that went directly into the hands of community members. We critiqued which community groups got it.
I think that's debatable. Who got
well,
it?
Well, I was going to say, we're debating whether the right community groups got it, but I think sometimes in Illinois, we're blessed with the problem of critiquing something that exists here when there's no other state doing it. And then every state that came after us went and added investment into community and even increase the number. New York came in and put 65%. That's what an Illinois did, and that's what I call success. Being able to put the money in the hands of community and model to other people that that's something that should be done. And that other states like Colorado and Washington that started well before us are now calling us and saying, all right, we need to figure out how to invest in our communities with this tax fund. I think that's success.
I think that to your point, though, it's a matter of what is success for everyone. What does success equal? Does it mean a small win, or does it mean actually accomplishing the goal of making sure that I look outside and I live and, you know, we looked in my home, 60649 and 606, you know, I look in the south side and the west side of Chicago, and I don't see the accomplishments that cannabis money has done, and it's been legalized since 2013. And so I think that we need to really make sure that, one, the people that deserve it are actually getting it. Do we have wins? I give kudos, first of all, to you, because I feel like you actually do care.
Hey, Belisha.
I feel like you're doing your best.
We're down to our last minute here. Imanya, tell us the name of the documentary and where our viewers can find it.
Yes, you can find this documentary on Who Gets to Open a Weed Dispensary on AJ Plus's YouTube channel, on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can follow me at IIWrites, and I will happily send you the link.
That's great. I want to thank all three of our guests for being here today and sharing this. And I got to encourage you, go jump on YouTube and watch this documentary. It is it's just an excellent discussion of what is an incredibly complex issue here in the U.S., but will only grow going forward as each state's trying to figure out their own way forward in this. Thanks for joining us on the stream, and we'll see you next time.